Welcome to the session about Silverlight and SharePoint 2010. For people that don't know me, my name is Jan Tielens. I'm a trainer at UTU, and we're from Belgium. What are we going to do inside this presentation? Well, of course, we're going to talk about the combination, which is very nice, I think, between SharePoint 2010 and Silverlight, you know, the technology from Microsoft. To build, in a very fancy word, rich internet applications. The topics that I've got on my agenda, first of all, very quickly, I would like to talk about what's the out-of-the-box stuff that you can find in SharePoint 2010 related to Silverlight. We're going to see what out-of-the-box Silverlight is already being used. And one thing from the out-of-the-box story, I'm going to highlight a little bit more, that's the Silverlight web part, which is basically said going to allow you to host a Silverlight application in SharePoint 2010 without writing a custom wrapper WebArt class. Of course, we're also going to talk about deploying your own custom Silverlight applications. The story for that is actually pretty nice in SharePoint 2010 together with Visual Studio 2010. So we're going to talk about building solutions with map folders, modules, and so on. And of course, I'm also going to show you how you can leverage your own Silverlight applications inside your custom WebArts. We're going to start off with a pretty basic demo, but we're also going to build some more advanced Silverlight web parts that can be customized by exposing custom properties. And to finish off, I hope I can show you as well a Silverlight application that is connected to SharePoint that doesn't run inside a browser, but out of the browser as a real application. Okay, so far so good. What's the story for Silverlight in SharePoint 2010? Well, you probably know that here and there in the out-of-the-box user interface of SharePoint, you will see some Silverlight, little Silverlight applications popping up. Important to know is that it's not required to have Silverlight installed on your client machine to be able to make use of SharePoint 2010, because there's always what they call a fallback scenario. So if you don't have Silverlight installed, SharePoint will render a more basic interface in plain HTML with Ajax-style JavaScript functions sitting in the background. So it's not required, but if you have it, it's of course nicer, let's say. Some examples where Silverlight is being used in the out-of-the-box user interface, the very fancy create dialog. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I will give a quick demo in just a second. Also, there is a component in SharePoint 2010 called Visio Services, which will allow you to publish a Visio diagram to a web page, and that web page can make use of Silverlight to visualize that diagram. You may think to yourself, well, is that exciting? Well, actually it is, because by doing so, you can build interactive diagrams on which the users can click on, even in the web user interface and so on. Also, the Office web applications can make use of Silverlight. You know, Word and Excel can now run inside a web browser instead of a real desktop applications. Well, if you have Silverlight installed, Silverlight can be used over there as well. Very quickly, some of the things that I just talked about. Remember the create dialog. If you go to your site actions, you've got over here the more options to create all kind of fancy stuff. The dialog that you see over here is actually a Silverlight control. And you can verify that by right-clicking somewhere on this dialog. And you see the little Silverlight menu item popping up. That means that this is really Silverlight. And it shows off very nicely. If I click over here on the different types, you can see a nice animation that is going to show you all the different options without postbacks. And I can even make use of this little search. If I go for a list, for example, I can see all the lists. I can very quickly find the custom list. A lot of custom lists. Here's my custom list. So this is a very quick example of how Silverlight is used just out of the box. Another thing that I would like to show you is an example of how Visio services are being used out of the box in SharePoint 2010 to visualize a workflow. You know, workflows in SharePoint 2010 already in 2007 are very interesting, very important, I think. But in SharePoint 2007, you always had the issue that, well, it was very hard to figure out in what stage a workflow was that was being executed. Who already approved, maybe in the approval process, that kind of stuff. Very easy in SharePoint 2010. Let me just navigate over here to a document library. And on this document library, I'm going to start a workflow for this document. let's make use of the out-of-the-box approval workflow in SharePoint 2010. And let's say we have a serial approval where first the trainer needs to do the approval, and then Jan needs to do the approval. Let it start. At this point in time, no Silverlight yet. Not even did this nicely animated image. But what I want to show you, if I click over here on this link, which is actually going to bring me to the page that in SharePoint 2007 would just display some data coming from your history lists. Well, in this case, if I click on it, you can see a nice Silverlight control that is actually going to visualize your workflow, and it's interactive, and you can zoom in and you can zoom out. So already pretty nice. If I go back to this workflow, if I navigate to my task list very quickly, I'm going to edit my task and mark, well, that document is okay for me. If I now go back to my document library, if I go back to the same visio diagram, as you can see over here, the next one that needs to approve is Jan, and you can see that the trainer already has approved. So this is a very rich a way for visualizing workflows, I think. It gets very interesting if you've got more complex workflows with different stages, that kind of stuff. And, of course, this is also Silverlight. Once again, if you don't have Silverlight installed on your client, you will still see a diagram like this, but it's built up by making use of plain HTML with images generated on your server, and it's not as interactive as this one, of course. Okay, let me switch back to my presentation. And the next thing that's available out of the box in SharePoint related to Silverlight that I would like to talk about is the Silverlight web part, which is actually a very basic web part. That web part can show a Silverlight application. You know, a Silverlight application, if you build it as a developer, it gets built into a single file, the .xap file. You can compare that one a little bit with SWF from Flash, but now with Microsoft technology, let's say. So the only property that you really need to set for that Silverlight web part is the URL that will actually point to the location of your XAP file. So if you have a Silverlight application, it will be very easy to use that Silverlight application in SharePoint 2010. You just upload it, for example, to a document library, because XAP file is just a file, and then you make use of the URL of your XAP file that points to the location in that document library in the Silverlight web part, and bam, you have your Silverlight application being displayed in the web UI without writing any custom wrapper web parts like we're going to do later on in this presentation. Cool thing about the Silverlight web part is that the XAP file can be hosted, of course, inside the context of SharePoint in a document library or in the virtual file system, whatever. But it can also be hosted outside of the SharePoint context. Maybe you're hosting your Silverlight applications, I don't know, somewhere in the cloud. You can still leverage those applications and use them inside the context of SharePoint. Very easy to show off. Let me navigate once again over here to this very basic document library. And I'm just going to upload a document in this document library. I've got on my desktop over here this very exciting Silverlight application, which is a clock. So let's just open up this one. Well, not open up this one, upload this one. See, it's just a file that is sitting in this document library. Let's right-click on it and copy the shortcut of this file to the clipboard. And now I can navigate to the home page of my site, edit the page, and very quickly insert a web part. Out of the box, you've got in media and content the Silverlight web part that you can make use of. Let's click add. When you add that Silverlight web part, you can paste the property, the URL over there. That's just the URL pointing to the XAP file inside my document library. Let's hit OK. And because we're still rolling in beta, you will see a nice error popping up over here. No worries, it will go away. I need to modify some properties over here. I'm going to set the width to a not set width. Let's hit apply. And if I now save the page, there we go. We've got the very exciting Silverlight clock showing up in our SharePoint user interface. So I could do that without writing a single line of code just because we have that out-of-the-box Silverlight web part available to us. Some more properties that you can set for the Silverlight web part, which might be interesting if you go over here in the other settings. At the bottom of the screen, or at the bottom of that task pane, you can set custom initialization parameters. If you have no idea what initialization parameters are in SilverLight applications, no worries. We will come back to that later on today. I'm going to build my own SilverLight application that is going to consume those parameters. But if you have an application that actually is already making use of them, once again, you don't need to build your own custom wrapper. You can just make use of the property over here. Okay, so far so good. For the rest of my demo, I'm going to delete this clock. Makes me nervous that I'm running out of time, but okay, we're good to go. Cool. Well, remember, I just showed you a demo. I can have a SilverLight application uploaded to a document library and using that SilverLight application in the SilverLight web part. But of course, well, uploading your SilverLight application to a document library is not, let's say, a very professional deployment technique. It's okay if you just need to deploy to one site, but if you need to deploy that very exciting clock application to, let's say, 200 websites, it would be very annoying that you would have to upload that XAP file to 200 document libraries. So there must be a better way to get your SilverLight applications deployed to SharePoint. Well, you probably know, since hopefully you know a little bit about SharePoint development, that SharePoint has a way to deploy SharePoint customizations, all kind of SharePoint customizations, by making use of SharePoint solutions. You know, a SharePoint solution is just a WSP file. It's like a setup package that contains customizations that can get deployed to SharePoint. Typically inside those SharePoint solutions, you can find features that will provision all kind of stuff. Well, it is possible to build a SharePoint solution that is actually going to provision a SilverLight application, a XAP file, in the context of SharePoint. And if you do so, you have the choice between two options. And you can think about getting your SilverLight application deployed either to the virtual file system or to the physical file system of your SharePoint sites. And what's the difference between the virtual and the physical file system? Well, the virtual file system is, well, the file system that you probably know from accessing SharePoint through your web browser or through the SharePoint designer. If you upload a document to a document library, that document will not get stored as a file on the file system of your server, but you probably know that that file gets stored inside a SQL Server database, so the file really doesn't exist on your server. Also, if you edit the file by making use of the SharePoint designer, that file will not be saved directly on the file system of your server, but the file will be saved in the virtual file system inside the content database of SharePoint. The physical file system, on the other end, is really a folder that you can find on the hard disk of every SharePoint server. It's also called the SharePoint root. So if you go to C, program files, common files, Microsoft Shared, web server extensions 14, and over there, typically in template layouts, you can publish or you can deploy some custom files over there as well. What's the big difference? What could be a decision point to either choose for the virtual file system or the physical file system? Well, the physical file system, if you put a file over there, it will be available straight away for all the SharePoint sites that are making use of that SharePoint server. So you just need to put the file over there once, and it can be downloaded from every single SharePoint site in that entire SharePoint server. Why is that? Well, in every SharePoint site, there is a virtual directory, which has the URL underscore layouts that is mapped to template layouts in your SharePoint root. So it's always accessible. The virtual file system, however, is, well, unique for every SharePoint site. Compare it with a document library. If you upload a document to document library A, it doesn't show up in the same document library on another site. You need to upload it over there as well. So depending on the scenario that you're having, you can choose for the virtual file system or the physical file system. For SilverLight, there is not a lot of difference between those two applications. The only thing that needs to be done to actually show your SilverLight application is the XAP file should be downloaded from your server to your client. If it's coming from the physical or the virtual file system, SilverLight doesn't care, as long as there is a URL that is pointing to the XAP file. Now, in Visual Studio 2010, it is very easy to build a SharePoint solution that is actually going to either deploy to the virtual file system or to the physical file system. If you would like to deploy to the physical file system, you just need to add in your SharePoint project in Visual Studio a mapped folder that can point to your 14 hive or your SharePoint root, as it's being called nowadays. And if you would like to make use of the virtual file system, you can add to your SharePoint project in Visual Studio 2010 a module that is going to allow you to, well, just upload a file, let's say, to the virtual file system. Really easy to show off in a quick demo. Let me create a new project, Visual Studio 2010. And let's go for an empty SharePoint project. Let's call it demo deploy, doesn't matter. You probably know from other demos, if you create a SharePoint project in Visual Studio, you can choose straight away between a sandbox solution and a farm solution. You know, sandbox solution is that great new development technique to get your SharePoint solutions deployed without the need to have an IT pro, an administrator, to go to SharePoint Central Administration, stuff like that. Now, the thing is, if you make use of a sandbox solution, it is not possible to deploy to the physical file system. Why is that? Well, remember I explained to you, if you have a file uploaded to the physical file system, it gets available for all the SharePoint sites in that entire SharePoint server. And that's exactly a thing that needs to be avoided if you have a sandbox solution. It wouldn't be nice that you've got, let's say, a power user deploying a sandbox solution and have that sandbox solution deploy a file that can be downloaded from other websites as well. So if you would like to make use of the physical file system, you need to fall back to the farm solution type of SharePoint solution. The virtual file system, of course, can be accessed by making use of sandbox solutions as well. So for my demo, let's go for a farm solution. Let's hit finish. This is a very empty SharePoint project, so what I can do straight away, I can right-click and I can add over here a new SharePoint map folder, and you will see a dialog that is going to show you the contents of the SharePoint root. See, these are actually the folders that you will find in C, program files, common files, and so on, till the 14 folder. And I can select, for example, templates, and I can go, well, I don't know, just straight beneath template, whatever, okay. And as you can see, that map folder will actually show up over here inside your project. By default, automatically a subfolder is created with the same name as your project, and I can add new files to this folder very easily. Right-click, add whatever you would like to add. Can be an image, can be, I don't know, an XML file, whatever. Can be, of course, your XAP file, if you would like to make use of Silverlight. So in this case, already I've got one file inside my template folder in the deploy demo subfolder. And if I would build this solution and deploy the solution, we would actually see this XML file being deployed to the physical file system. Cool thing about Visual Studio 2010 is the fact that it is very easy to figure out what is inside your SharePoint solution by making use of this package explorer. You see over here, this is my SharePoint solution. It already contains one element, which is a map folder, and this folder is going to deploy this single XML file, just for you to know, okay, it's in there. That's the physical file system. What about the virtual file system? Also very easy. In our SharePoint project, we just need to add a new item, and we can choose for the template, which is called module. Okay. Now, for the people that were developing or that are still developing for SharePoint 2007, and this is probably a thing that you know, I usually compare a module with, let's say, a copy action. A module in a feature can copy a file from the feature into the virtual file system. It's the same technique that is being used to get a .webpart file in the WebPart gallery, for example, if you're provisioning WebPart files using a feature. Cool thing about Visual Studio 2010 is that you don't have to write that XML manually anymore, or you don't need to fall back on using some helper tools to actually do that. As we will see, the module will just look like a folder inside your solution. And the cool thing is that all the files that you put inside this module will automatically be included in your SharePoint solution. So over here, well, Microsoft decided to put in a very exciting sample text, which is just a placeholder, as you can see. But if I open up elements.xml, this would be the XML that you would have to write yourself in SharePoint 2007. We can see that we've got a module that is making use of a file, and that's my sample.txt file that was added over there. Once again, the cool thing is if you add a new file to that SharePoint solution, and I can go once again for my XML file, or in real life, this would be, of course, your XAP file. Okay, this is my XML file, and as you can see, my module automatically gets a new child element for the file XML file too. So if I would build this solution, get it deployed, it would be deployed into the virtual file system of SharePoint 2010. I'm going to show you a real-life example of a solution that makes use of this technique in one of my later demos. I'm not going to do that. It's not very exciting at this point in time. So let's close this one. Okay. Now, probably, if you're going to build a SharePoint solution, that's going to make use of a module or a map folder to get a SilverLight application deployed to SharePoint. Probably you're also going to build a web part that can be used by the user that is actually going to show that SilverLight application. And building such a web part can be very, very easy because the only thing that the SilverLight web part should do is, well, that SilverLight web part should generate a small piece of HTML, and that HTML is actually responsible for rendering the SilverLight control, downloading your XAP file, and so on. In HTML, you need to generate or you need to render an object element, and the data attribute of your object should point to the SilverLight application. And by making use of the parameters, you can point to the location of the XAP file. You can specify your initiation parameters, and so on. Now, if you don't know the HTML by heart, as I do. I don't know that HTML by heart. Another thing that you can do is if you build a SilverLight application in Visual Studio, Visual Studio will automatically generate a test page for you to show that SilverLight app. And in that test page, the HTML that you see over here is being used, so you can just copy and paste it. So if you forget it or if you would like to copy paste it, it can be done. Also, you can see over here a hyperlink that is being used that will actually point to the location on Microsoft.com. That is a hyperlink that is shown to the user when SilverLight is not installed. So you can leave it away, but then the user will not just see anything if SilverLight is not installed. So that's a thing that you can add to have a nicer user experience. If a user uses your web part but SilverLight is not installed, he or she will see a download link that will point to Microsoft.com, and you know the story. Also, this code snippet I'm going to show you in my very next demo, or one of my next demos. Now, before I will jump into that demo, there's another thing that is very nice that you can do in SilverLight in combination with SharePoint 2010, and that's making use of the client-side object model. Quick question, how many of you were in my session yesterday evening? Okay, quite some people, good. For the people that were not in my session, the client-side object models of SharePoint 2010, very basically said, will allow you to write code that will interact with data that is stored in SharePoint sites. So you can write code that will read data from lists, from document libraries, that can create lists and document libraries, that kind of stuff. In SharePoint 2007, we only had the web services that allowed us to do that. People working with the web services of SharePoint 2007 probably can testify that they're not that great to work with, and that's nicely said. But now we've got a very clean API that will allow us to work with real objects that will make the calls to the corresponding web services for us, so we don't have to worry about generating all the XML, getting the data back, formatting the data, and so on. Client-side object models were designed by Microsoft by keeping into mind two very important design goals, consistency and efficiency. That means that the code that you are used to write for SharePoint 2007 probably using the server-side object model resembles quite a lot of code that you need to write to make use of the client-side object models. And also, the client-side object model in SharePoint 2010 exists in three flavors. We've got one for plain.NET. in Windows applications or WPF applications. We've got one for Silverlight. That's the one that I'm going to show you today. And we've got one for ECMAScript or JavaScript. So if you would like to write just plain JavaScript, you can also make use of the object model over there. And the cool thing is that, well, the code that you need to write for any of those three different flavors resembles quite a lot. So you don't need to study Silverlight, and then you need to study the .NET CLR version. So if you know the concepts, you're good to go. Also, efficiency, as I mentioned, a very important design goal, allowing you to build very fast applications, focusing on only making use of data that is required in your application, not consuming too much data, not having too many round trips, that kind of stuff. Now, the Silverlight client object model can be found on every SharePoint server as just two assemblies. We've got microsoft.sharepoint.client.silverlight, and we've got microsoft.sharepoint.client.silverlight.runtime. Two DLLs, which are just two files that you can find in your SharePoint root. I included over here the location for that. So the first thing that you need to do, if you would like to make use of the client-side object model inside your Silverlight application, is add a reference to those two files, and then you're good to go. Okay, now let me explain the demo that I would like to build together with you, let's say. I guess you guys know YouTube, that small website where you can upload videos. Well, let's try to build that in a better way for SharePoint 2010. So what I've done already is I've created over here a document library, which I called videos. And in this videos document library, I've uploaded some video files. Not exciting video files, but you get the idea. For every video file, I defined some metadata. So every video has a nice title, and every video has a small description about the contents of that video. Okay. My goal is to build a Silverlight application that will connect to SharePoint to retrieve a list of videos that is available in this document library, show that list to the user in a pretty nice user interface. The user can click on one of those videos. The video starts playing, so the user can see, well, actually the content of that video. The advantage, of course, is that if you would like to add another video, you just upload the file to this document library, assign the metadata, and you're good to go. So that's the thing that we're going to build. Let's switch to Visual Studio to get started. I'm going to open up a solution that I prepared. It's called SharePoint Tube. And we're going to see over there, there is already one Silverlight application, which already has a reference to the client-side object model. Remember the two DLLs, the two assemblies that I just discussed. Now, one thing that I need to mention related to those two DLLs, those two assemblies, there is a bug in Visual Studio 2010 Beta 2, so it's a bug that you probably will hit yourself at home as well. Apparently, if you add a reference to the Silverlight client-side object model directly in the 12 hive, you will get an exception that, well, the assembly cannot be loaded. And apparently the underlying reason is that the path is too long for Visual Studio 2010. I have no idea why, but anyway, what you need to do, what I did, is you can just copy those two XAP files to your desktop and then add a reference to those two assemblies, those two DLLs, to your desktop, and then add a reference to, well, the location on your desktop. We're told that this is being fixed in RTM, but, well, this is a thing that you probably will encounter yourself if you go and try out Silverlight tonight as well. Okay. They're not? Okay. For the rest, this is a pretty empty solution. I've got over here my main page.xaml, which is, as you can see, very empty. The only thing that I did is I specified a fixed width and a height, because I would like to do a little bit of formatting, but for the rest, nothing on it. And let us try to build some XAML that will show a user the list of videos that we're interested in. And in XAML, we can make use of the list box control. And in the list box control, we can have list box items. And in this list box item, I'm going to make use of a text block. And this text block will display, for example, video 1. And if I switch to design, you will actually see, well, nothing. Okay, now we've got one very exciting list item. Remember, I have some extra metadata for my video, which is my content. So in every list box item, I actually would like to make use of a stack panel. And what is a stack panel in Silverlight? Well, that's going to allow you to align one or more controls. So we're going to say the stack panel orientation is equal to vertical. So I can add another text block where I've got video one contents. And maybe I can have the font size over here set to, I don't know, 16, something like that. And if we switch to design mode, okay, this will be the UI. And if we have multiple list box items, the UI will actually be something like this. Okay, so far so good. Now, in this example, I'm hard coding all the different options of my list box. That's, of course, not a thing that I would like to do. I would like to retrieve my list box items from the SharePoint list. So this is not a good idea. Let's get rid of it. I just wanted to show you that, how my example will be organized. Whoops. I still need to have that one. And what I'm going to do in my list box is I'm going to make use, let me grab the example that I prepared. I'm going to make use of data binding. Oops. This box is already there. Okay. So this is my list box. I give my list box a name, videos list with a fixed width. And over here, I will describe how every item in that list box should look like. So remember, I've got my stack panel with my two text blocks, with the font size. I also define a font weight, stuff like that. And the cool thing about Silverlight is that data binding will be very, very easy. See, I've got over here my text properties. The first text property will data bind to a property called title. I can just make use of the syntax, curly bracket, binding, and then a name of a property. And the second text blocks will data bind with a property called content. So whatever object that you data bind, or whatever array of objects that you data bind to this list box, the title and the contents property will be retrieved. Now, what's the stuff that I will data bind? Well, I can show you. I prepared as well a very small data class. You see, I've got a class called video item, and every video item will have a title, contents, and a URL as well. That will be the URL pointing to the video file, which will be needed to actually display the video. So I will build an array or a collection of items and show those items inside this list box. So far, so good. Of course, we need to write a little bit of code to get this to work. Let me show you that code. Okay. This is the code behind file for my XAML. And in this constructor, we will actually write some code that is going to make use of the client-side object model. For the people that were here in my previous session, the code will be quite familiar. I need to build the client context. For my website. Instead of having a fixed URL, I could also make use of the current website if you prefer to do that. So it depending on where the Silverlight application is being hosted, the corresponding document library will be loaded. Not going to do that, and I will have a reference to a list. Let's say the videos list is equal to my context.web. Dot lists dot get list by title, and I'm going to make use of this constant definition over here. See, this is the name of my document library. Okay, I could have typed the video string directly as a parameter over there as well, but I'm going to make use of that value a couple of times, so it's nicer to define it in a constant, and we're going to change that afterwards. I also need to define list item, a list item collection, and I'm going to do that at the level of my class, list item collection, videos, video list items will be the name. Video list items is equals to the videos list dot I dot get items. Once again, for the people that were in my previous session, if you get items from a SharePoint list by making use of the client-side object model, you can build a camel query. But what I would like to do is I would like to display just all the videos. So I'm going to retrieve all the video items. The cool thing is that you don't have to build that camel query yourself. You can make use of a static function create all items query, which will give me all the items. I need to specify in my context that I would like to load my video list items, like that. And then I'm going to have a context.execute query, execute query async. What's the deal, once again, for getting data in SilverLight using the client-side object model? Well, all the data access is going to happen asynchronously from the user interface thread. So when you're waiting for data, the user interface is not being blocked, and that would be very annoying for your end user. So in the execute query async method, you need to pass two parameters, which are actually pointers to two functions, a success function and a fail function. I haven't written, well, success and fail yet, but those are the functions that are being called. And to speed up things a little bit, let's have over here the success callback, and let's have the fail callback. First of all, what's going to happen in the fail callback? Well, in the fail callback, I'm just going to display a message that will tell me what went wrong, hopefully, by showing the error message that I get as a parameter over here, and the client request failed event arguments. Another thing that you need to think about, remember, query execute query async will execute in the background thread. So the data will be received in the background thread. It is not allowed to touch the user interface from that background thread. So we need to marshal the thread to the user interface thread. And you can do that by making use of this syntax. You just call a begin invoke where you've got a lambda expression that will just contain the codes that should be executed once again on the main thread. Some kind of the same mechanism I've got in my success callback. Okay, so when we receive the data, I'm going to build a generic list of video item instances. Remember, a video item was just that data class that I will use to data bind to my list box. And I will loop over all the results that I got from SharePoint. Remember, I've got the video list items collection, which is being filled by making use of the client-side object model. And for every item in that list, I will create a new video item where I will set the title, I will set the contents, and then I'm going to do a little bit of a special thing. I'm going to format the URL already by making use of the client-side object model. You have access to a property of a document which is called the file leaf ref, which is, well, just your file name. And I'm going to build a URL that will first contain the URL of the site, the name of the document library over here, and then, well, the file name. So that's what's happening over here. I'm building the file name already in this piece of code. The video's document library constant, that's the one that I specified on top. And I've got over here the host of my request, which will basically be, well, in my case, the URL demos.utucourse.com. Okay. So far, so good. At the end, don't forget to set the item source property of your list box. So we will actually do the data binding. So let's build this code. Build succeeded. And before I go and actually show you a web part that will show this SilverLight application, I can already make use of the technique that I talked about in the beginning of this presentation. So if I go back to my document library, I can just upload the XAP file. This is the XAP file that we just created. Let's upload. Okay. Let's hit save. Let's copy the URL. And because it's a pretty big control, and I'm running on a low screen resolution, I have a blank page over here. And I'm just going to add that SilverLight web part on this page. Media and content, SilverLight web part, URL. Let's change the width and let's set the height to 375. So hit OK and let's hit save. And there you go, we've got a very exciting list box that will show all the data coming from SharePoint. And see, this is the data, including the metadata from my document library. Of course, well, nothing is going to happen yet, but let's try to fix that. What I would like to do now is when somebody is going to click on one of the video should start playing. In Silverlight, that is very easy, because in Silverlight you can make use of a control that is called a media element. And let me show you the example for that. See, a media element, which I will just give, which I will just give a name. I will say, well, stretch in a uniform fashion. Otherwise, well, your videos are stretched, not in uniform fashion. So that's the only property that I need to set. Now, to actually show that in Silverlight, I need to have another stack panel, which will align my list box and my media elements in an horizontal way. And I'm going to specify in my list box that I've got an event handler for the event selection changed. Okay. Let's save my example. So where's my event handler?
It's not been generated yet.
It's not generated?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's... selection changed. Okay, there we go. Here's my event handler that is now generated. And well, what I need to do now is I need to write some code. That is going to fetch the selected item from my videos list. I'm going to cast that to a video item so we can have access to the URL property, and we create a new URI for that string and put that in the source property of our media element. So far, so good. Let's build this code. And let's upload once again to our document library. And let's do it like this. Okay. Let it save. And let's go to that page that I showed you, the demo page. And there we go. If I now click on one of the videos, you can see that well, the video starts playing straight away. Well, this is just a pause in the video. There we go. Okay. Now I can see that you guys are not yet impressed. let's come up with something else then. usually when I'm watching a nice movie in YouTube, I want to watch it full screen. This is way too small to watch this this screencast, for example. So what I'm going to show you is how you can make that happen in Silverlight as well. So the idea is when somebody is going to click on the video, I will switch to full screen, and then we can go back to the normal screen size. So for my media elements, I will have the event, the mouse left button down. Okay. Here's my event handler that has been generated. So this is the code that will be executed when we click. And what I'm going to do, let's grab that code. I'll actually set the property called isFullScreen of my content host, the current one, to, well, the opposite value of the current value of the property. So if we're in full screen, we will go back to the normal screen. If we're not in full screen, well, you get the ID. Now, this is, of course, not yet going to work completely. Over here in my constructor, I'm also going to have a small piece of code. I'm going to attach an event to the full screen changed event of my content host current. So when the full screen mode is going to change, this event handler will be called. Scroll down and implement the event handler. That's this one. The event handler is not... Oh, it doesn't contain the actual event, so let's make use of IntelliSense once again. Let's try to make use of IntelliSense. Come on. Oh, tap was a secret key. Tap. Yeah. And there we go. Let's grab that code once again. Okay. So what is the code going to do? Well, the code is going to check, are we running in full screen? If so, I'm going to set the width of my Silverlight application to the actual width and the height of my content. That will be the full screen, of course. And I'm going to set the width of my media element to the same size. And I'm going to say, well, the videos list, well, let's hide it. And so we only have the movie that is showing full screen. And when we're not running in full screen, we're going to reset to the default values. So that's basically everything that's going to happen. Let's build this code. And once again, let's navigate to the document library. And let's upload the document, the XAP file that is. Okay. Let's hit save. Let's go to the demo page. There you go. If I click on this link, on this item, if I now click on the movie, as we can see, we go to full screen. We can go back, and that's going to work, hopefully, for the other movies as well. Okay. Question?
Small question. Do you need to upload the file every time again, or is there an easier way to do it? What do you recommend? Just point to the local...
Yeah, so the question is, do you need to upload the XAP file manually over and over again? Well, no. What I would do is I would build a SharePoint solution that actually contains the XAP file. So when I will show you that in my next demo, when I'm actually going to build the web part, and then the web part solution contains the XAP file as well. And then in Visual Studio, you can just right-click, click deploy, and everything gets deployed automatically. Okay. So if it's not clear yet, it will become clear in my next demo. Cool. Now, let's switch back to Visual Studio, because we're not yet done. Remember I told you I want to show you, a web part that will actually make use of this Silverlight application. I prepared that web part already a little bit. Okay, I've got over here my SharePoint Tube web part. Okay. This is the web part code. And as you can see, the only code that is in there is in the render contents, where we do a writer.write, and we generate the HTML that I just copy and pasted from the generated test page in a Silverlight application in Visual Studio. Notice that I set the important source parameter to the URL /SharePoint2010tube-module and then the name of my XAP file. That is because inside my web part, I defined a module. See over here, my XAP file is inside this module, which will be deployed to the virtual file system of SharePoint. And that was my previous demo. So far, so good. I only need to have the latest version of that XAP file. Let's copy this one. If you would like to automate this step, you typically build a batch file that will, after every successful build, grab the XAP and put it inside this module. And now I need to do that manually. Okay. And we can right-click on the project and get it deployed. And this web part, by the way, is also a sandbox solution, so it should go quite quickly. Okay, deploy succeeded. So let's switch this page once again in edit mode. I will get rid of this Silverlight web part. And let's click insert. Let's go to web parts, custom, my SharePoint Tube web part. Let's hit add. And there we go. If I save the page, now we've got exactly the same result. But this is probably nicer from the point of view of your end user. Just add a web part and everything is already pre-configured instead of uploading the XAP file and so on. And so once again, we didn't see that. This XAP file is not downloaded from the document library anymore, but it's downloaded from, still the virtual file system from the module that provisioned it. Okay. Now, you may be wondering, what is the added value? Oh, I hope that was not PowerPoint that was crashing. You may be wondering, what's the added value for building a custom wrapper web part if we already have the Silverlight web part out of the box? The deployment is a little bit easier from the point of view of your end user. But the advantage is, if you build your wrapper web part class yourself, you can build also advanced wrapper web classes. And what's the advanced stuff that I'm talking about? Well, you probably know if you have built SharePoint web parts, that web parts can be customized by users by defining custom properties in the task pane. So you can build a wrapper web part that exposes a property, and that property gets sent to your Silverlight application to make a customizable Silverlight application. In the context of my demo, one thing that I could do, for example, remember, in my code, I hard-coded the name of my document library, videos. It was in a constant string. Well, it would be much more flexible to allow the user to define the name of the document library from which we would like to download the videos. And that would be would make much more sense, I think. Well, let's try to do that. The steps that you need to go through, first of all, inside your wrapper WebPart class, you need to expose that property. And that property, just as in a normal WebPart, needs to have the attribute web browsable and personalizable. And then you need to find a way to actually send the value of that property to your Silverlight application. And that may sound much more easy than it actually is, because your WebPart is living on the server and your Silverlight application is living on the client. So how is it going to communicate? Well, there's in Silverlight, we've got a technique for that. In the HTML that is generated by your wrapper WebPart, you can define an additional parameter called initParams, which will just contain a string value, and that value will be sent to your Silverlight application when it's rendered inside your browser. And inside that Silverlight application, in the application startup event, you will have access to those property values, to the init parameters, that is. Let me also show you that in my demo. So let's go first of all to the wrapper WebPart class. Let's just build a property of the type string, videos, document library. And let's decorate this property with web browsable. So it's shown in the task pane of SharePoint. And let's add personalizable as well. So SharePoint takes care of serializing the value of this property and saving the property value automatically in the content database of SharePoint. Then I'm going to add one additional parameter. So in the HTML that is generated by my wrapper WebPart, I'm going to define initParams is equal to videos doc clip. That's the name of, and that would be, of course, the name of my property as well, videos doc clip. Okay, so the value that was entered by the user in the WebPart will be sent to the Silverlight application through initParams. And inside the Silverlight application itself, we need to go to the application where we have the application startup. And in the application startup, I don't have a code snippet for that, so let's quickly write it. If in my event rx the init parameters, the keys contains the, how did I call it? Videos.clip. Then we're going to specify that I would like to create a new instance of the main page by defining a certain property in the constructor. That would be e.initParams. Videos doc lib as well. Okay, I get an error on IntelliSense. Why is that? Because I haven't provided that extra option in the constructor of my Silverlight control. By default, we will look for videos. So let's go to the constructor. Okay. And let's have a string library like that. And let's say the videos doc clip videos library. And let's remove that constant. Okay, so once again, we will enter a value in our web part. The value will be sent or will be generated in the HTML, will be sent to the Silverlight application in the application startup, and we will consume that information in the constructor of our Silverlight application. So far, so good. Let's build my code. Build succeeded. So now I need to manually copy that tab once again to my Silverlight, to my SharePoint project. Let's paste it. Okay. And let's right click deploy. Sandbox solution gets deployed, the WebPart gets upgraded. So hopefully if I refresh this page. Okay. We've got an error, that's okay, because I need to fill out the videos document library. There we go. And now we've got the configurable web part. And so once again, by just modifying the property of this web part over here in miscellaneous, I can actually define where I would like to load my videos from. And that's the name of the document library, much more flexible. Okay. Final thing that I would like to show you is actually a pretty cool thing that you can do with SilverLight applications as well. And it's very interesting, in my opinion, in combination with SharePoint 2010, is running your SilverLight applications just out of the browser. And what do they mean with SilverLight applications out of the browser? Well, at this point in time, or usually, you will see SilverLight applications that are rendered inside a web page, which will make quite a lot of sense. But since SilverLight 3 and also in SilverLight 4, you can choose to build a SilverLight application that doesn't require you to have a browser in which the SilverLight application gets hosted. So you can install that SilverLight application as a real application in your start menu on your client machines. And the deployment technique that you get resembles quite a lot click once. For the people that work with click once, the application gets automatically downloaded. So it's a very nice way to get your application deployed, I think. And for the people that know Adobe Air a little bit with the applications that you can install, well, it's pretty much the same, but a little bit better, let's say. No? I think. I don't know anything about Air. Now, what is new in SilverLight 4, which is currently still in beta? Well, you can still, of course, build your applications that will run out of the browser, but developers have more control about the Chrome, so that means that you have more control about the window that sits around your SilverLight application, so you can find the width and the height as a developer in your code. Since SilverLight 4, you can also make use of full trust applications. So you can have a SilverLight application that doesn't run in the sandbox. Why is that interesting? Well, by default, if you have a SilverLight application that is running inside your web browser, that SilverLight application cannot connect to any data that is not coming from its original data source, unless you have that client access policy file. If you ever encounter that issue can be solved by making use of a full trust SilverLight application, and then you can connect to any data source, even if the data source is not coming from, well, the original location of the SilverLight application. Very basically said, you can host a SilverLight app in SharePoint, run it out of the browser, and that SilverLight application can then connect maybe to yet another SharePoint site, not the SharePoint site where the data was originating from. As I said, works great in SharePoint, and that's the final demo that I would like to show you. Now, to make this work, I'm going to make a small change in my code. For a second, I'm just going to hard code once again the video's name of the document library. You guys didn't see that. But more important, I'm going to change a property on the level of my SilverLight application in Visual Studio. Over here in the properties, I can just enable a checkbox that says enable running application out of browser. That's it. And we can define some properties. For example, we can give our application a title, we can give it a width, a height, we can describe the shortcut, the description, and if you want to, you can even define some icons that will be used in your start menu and your Chrome to actually display your SilverLight application. At the bottom, you also have the option to specify, well, this SilverLight application needs to have full trust. It's not required for my demo because my data is coming from SharePoint. Let's hit OK. That's basically the only thing that I need to change. Let's build my application again. Let's grab the XAP. And let's put it inside the module. Okay. And let's deploy our SilverLight web part once again to SharePoint. There we go. And let's refresh the page over here. Side pages demo. So the new version of my SilverLight application is downloaded, still works great. But now I can right-click on my SilverLight application, like anywhere. And as you can see, there's a new menu option that is being displayed that says install SharePoint Tube application onto this computer. So let's try to do that. Okay, we've got a nice dialogue here where you can select, hey, I would like to show it in the start menu, maybe also on my desktop, whatever. And let's hit OK. And there we go. We've got a real application that is well, giving us the same functionality. But now the cool thing is that I can just close my browser and go to my start menu. And we will see in my start menu, there we go, the SharePoint Tube application that is sitting over there. And also on my desktop, here is the SharePoint Tube application as well. Remember, you can change the icon if you want to. And I can just double-click on this application. It starts, downloads data from SharePoint, and I can consume that SharePoint data and this, well, SilverLight application that doesn't need to have a browser installed. So this is, I think, a pretty nice scenario to expose your SharePoint data as well. Question?
Can that application interact with the local machine?
I think so. If you need to run in full trust, for sure, but I don't know the amount of interaction that you can have. I don't know for sure if you then can access the file system. There is isolated storage, I know for sure, but I'm not 100% sure of that. Okay, do you know what you would like to do on the local machine?
It would be pretty good to do stuff with local files on the machine and then use that as some kind of way of populating stuff on the server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably yes, but I cannot guarantee that. Okay. Another question? To be honest, so the question is, how can you get SilverLight Connect over SSL? So you mean consuming data over SSL? To be honest, I never tried. Mike, you tried?
No, I saw a video on that. The URL where you got the SilverLight app from also must be SSL.
Okay.
Down in the EU can consume SSL.
Okay, so...
If you do HTTP for the exact file, then the SSL will fail miserably.
Okay. So the answer is, thank you, that if you want to consume HTTPS data, that your XAP file also needs to be downloaded from an HTTPS location.
The same location.
The same location. Even. Okay. Now, one more thing that I would like to talk about related to this out-of-the-browser application. As you can see, I can also choose to remove this application and to get rid of it. Now, remember, typically an end user is going to make use of your client application over here on my demo page. To make it more obvious for the end user that this is an application that can be executed inside your client computer as well, instead of having that user right-click on your application and click install the application or remove the application, you can also trigger this from within your code. So you can have a button inside your application that says install and then execute the same action. Or in your code, you can verify if the application is already installed on the client machine. If not, pop up a dialog, for example, this application must be installed on your client. That kind of stuff is all implemented in SilverLight 4, that is. Okay. Let me switch back to my presentation and finish up. Some resources that I would like to point to if you're interested in the stuff that I talked about today. The SilverLight website contains some great examples for SilverLight, which you can also leverage, of course, in SharePoint, especially for the SilverLight 4 stuff, the new out-of-the-browser capabilities. Also, SilverLight 4 will allow you to work with webcams and microphones, so you can leverage that in SharePoint as well as if you want. If you would like to learn more about the client-side object model to retrieve data from SharePoint, over there you can find a link that will point to the MSDN website, or I can refer back to the presentation that I did yesterday. And there's also some great SharePoint content on Channel 9, especially for developers. Final slide, I would like to thank you for attending this session. I hope I've been able to show you some cool stuff about SilverLight in SharePoint, and I would like to encourage you once again to fill out your feedback forms. If you have questions, feel free to come to me or to shout them to me, but thanks for attending.